Tonight I will be reading from Genesis, the 42nd.
Doris is going to speak for us this evening. As I said just a moment ago, we have a wonderful group of young people here. We're very proud of them, and they have a spiritual depth to them that is very commendable. I think about my own generation and go back to that age, and believe it or not, I can remember when I was your age. It was under either late patriarchal or early Mosaic period. I'm not quite sure about that part of it, but I do recall it. But I don't believe that my generation had what I see in this generation, the spiritual depth and commitment. And I commend you for that. And one of our young people here, Brother Josh Doris, I especially want to commend. He has grown tremendously over the last number of years, all of his life, actually. And you may not know it or not, but he's been doing some speaking over the last little while. You know, of course, about invitations that he has given here. He was on our Young Men series. I believe it was not this last summer, but maybe the summer before. And he occasionally speaks where Tammy's folks worship up at Mount Vernon, Park City. And while he was away in school down in Florida, he did some speaking. And he expressed recently some interest to us in speaking here for us. And we are delighted to see his development and to perhaps have a small part in that development. And so Brother Josh is going to speak for us this evening. And we commend to you Brother Josh Doris. And he'll have the time he needs to develop his study in the life of Joseph. We'll look forward to that. Josh?
Well, I want to wish all of you a good evening, and thank you so much for coming out today. I know my name was on the news and notes, and it was on the PowerPoint rather boldly, so you all knew I was going to be preaching tonight, and you still showed up. So thank you so much for that. I wanted to, first of all, thank the elders so much for this opportunity. I look forward to perhaps doing this some more for you all in the future. I greatly enjoy speaking, and I want to thank the elders so much for this opportunity that I get to preach. If you want to open up your Bibles to Genesis chapter 37, we'll spend all of our time in the latter part of Genesis this evening. Genesis chapter 37, and as the PowerPoint leaves nothing to the imagination, we're going to talk about the life of Joseph. The title on the news and notes I had was Lessons from Joseph, the Life of Joseph. I want to look at the beginning part of his life up to his position under Pharaoh, and look at a few instances in his life and discuss those, and then make some applications of those towards the end. It's kind of interesting. In the past couple of years, I've done more teaching. I've had the distinct privilege to teach the junior high class and the high school class, and it's a great experience for me to do that, because, you know, I've been at this church my entire life, going to these classes, the cradle roll all the way up, and, you know, I get to look at these stories and watch these characters, and it's very intriguing to me. But it seems a lot, they're just stories. But when I get to study for myself to prepare things for class, I look more in depth, look at the applications from these stories, and that's what I want to do tonight with the story of Joseph. You all know it very well. It's one we're told time and time again from the time that we're little kids all the way up to now. So I want to kind of go a quick review over the beginning part of Joseph's life and then make some applications there. First off, why exactly should we study the life of Joseph? He's not in the direct line of the messianic promises, and more specifically the seed promise, which you all know. He, you know, the direct line from Abraham down to Christ, Joseph actually isn't part of that lineage. So why is he even in the Bible? Well, first off, let me suggest to you that his story is very important to the overall story of the Hebrews. And I say that because it tells more in depth on how the Israelites came to be in Egypt, how they came to be enslaved in Egypt. The Bible could have very easily gone from Genesis chapter 37 to Exodus chapter 1 and just jumped over all that with a little side note saying, oh, and the Israelites ended up in Egypt and were slaves there. But I think another reason, and more importantly so, that his story is in the Bible is because his life is one that's worthy of emulation. And I say that meaning, you know, his life is one that we can look to as an example. His life is one that we can look at, study, and perhaps even mold our own lives after. He's one of the greatest servants in the Bible, and one that we can look to learn something from. If you want to open up your Bibles again to Genesis chapter 37, we'll start reading there. I want to read the first 11 verses there in chapter 37. It says, "Now Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. This is the history of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah and his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all of his children, because he was the son of his old age. Also he made him a tunic of many colors. But when his brothers saw that his father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Now Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. So he said to them, 'Please hear this dream which I have dreamed. There we were, binding sheaves in the field. Then behold, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And indeed your sheaf stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf.' And his brothers said this to him, 'Shall you indeed reign over us? Or shall you indeed have dominion over us?' So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Then he dreamed still another dream and told it to his brothers and said, 'Look, I have dreamed another dream. And this time the sun, the moon, and 11 stars bowed down to me.' So he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said this to him, 'What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to you?' And his brothers envied him, but his father kept the matter in mind." So we first meet Joseph when he's 17 years old in Canaan. He's the son of Jacob's favored wife, Rachel, and because of that, he gets preferential treatment. It says there in verse 3 that his father loved him more than all of his other children. And you know, with that preferential treatment, he gets special privileges. When it's talking about his brothers going out and tending to the flocks, he's the one that kind of goes out and checks on them and then comes back to tell his father how they're doing. And also he gets preferential treatment in the form of a coat, a pretty cool coat. You got all the colors of the rainbow in it, as the movies depict. And his brothers hated him for this special treatment. And to add to that resentment that's caused by his preferential treatment, he has dreams of greatness that involve his family bowing down to him. Now, that's just pouring salt in the wound for Joseph. When he's talking to his brothers, who already hate him because he's the favorite son. I don't know if you could say me or Olivia is the favorite, but Olivia would like to think that she is, but I would say that I probably am. But we don't hate each other over it, and we can speak peaceably to each other. But I don't have dreams of greatness that have involved any of them bowing down to me, but Joseph did. And his brothers hated him because he was the favorite. And now he's going to tell them these dreams there. Oh, and by the way, side note, you're going to bow down to me and worship me. So his brothers, you know, that just does not sit well with them. But it says that his father even rebuked him. But he kept the matter in mind. Now the rest, and starting in verse 12, we see that his brothers go to check on the flock in Shechem. And Jacob sends Joseph out to check and see how they're doing again. So he's, again, going to check on them, bring back a report on how they're doing. Again, not exactly what the brothers want from him. But he goes out to do this. And he goes to Dothan first, he goes to Shechem first and finds them at Dothan. Now, they see him coming over a hill, and then that's when they start to plot to kill him. Now, I want to stress three times in my lesson tonight, three or four instances in Joseph's life about exactly what we might read over when we first look at the story. It's very easy to read the story, you know, because we all know it so well. They don't like him. They don't want him in their lives. But you actually got to step back and take a look at this. These are his brothers, and they want him dead. They see him coming over a hill, and as soon as they see him coming, here's that dreamer. Here he comes. And we got to get rid of him. We got to kill him. He's just nothing but trouble for us. So they see him coming, and they plot to kill him. Again, I've never plotted to kill Olivia. But there's been times that it's crossed my mind, maybe, I don't know. But these men truly wanted their brother dead. And remember, at this point, he's done nothing wrong. And I'm sure he's the favorite, and that may be a reason to dislike someone. But he hasn't done anything wrong deserving of death. But they want him dead. So they decide, with Reuben's advice, because he's the one that has compassion on him, he says, you know, let's not kill him. We can't have he's our flesh and our blood. We can't have his blood on our hands. Let's throw him in this pit. And then we'll decide what to do with him later. Now, Reuben's plan, as you all know, is to leave him in this pit and be able to come back and get him later. But so they throw him in this pit and then grab a bite to eat. Now, I threw that in there just to show exactly how heartless his brothers were at this point. I say that because they put him in a pit wanting to kill him and torture him. and then let's grab a sandwich. That's all like sick-minded these people were. They want him dead. They're not going to kill him yet, so then they grab a bite to eat. I don't have the stomach for that, but apparently they do. Now, while they're grabbing a bite to eat, they see some Ishmaelite traders pass by. And then the brain wheels kind of start turning. And then Judah, I believe, says, you know, well, what profit do we get of his death? Let's sell him. That way we get something out of it, and he's gone. So that's what they do. They see these Ishmaelite traders, and they sell him to them for 20 shekels of silver. Now, obviously, there's the obvious comparison there of someone being traded for money. We make that comparison to Christ, who was betrayed by one of his closest friends, Judas, for 30 pieces of silver. Not exactly sure what the ratio of a shekel to a piece is, but we kind of see the comparison there. And so his brothers do this, and they take his coat, and they ruin it. They kill a kid goat, and they dip it in the blood, and, you know, shred it up so it looks like an animal's got to it. And they give it to their father. And they say, you know, I guess, can you recognize this coat? Do you know whose this is? And, of course, his father recognizes immediately and thinks, you know, my son's dead. Surely there's, beyond a reasonable doubt, you know, he's no more. So they fake his death and sell him to these traders. And then at the end of chapter 37, in verse 36, and again in chapter 39, verse 1, we see that he is sold into the house of Potiphar. Now, again, let's step back and see exactly what's happened thus far. His brothers hated him so much as to the point that they plotted to kill him, and they just, like, let him slide because of one of the brothers having compassion. So they sell him into slavery. Now, I want to stress this point again. It's very easy to read over. When Joseph first went into Potiphar's house, when he was first sold by his brothers, he was a slave. I mean, it's easy to read over this to him going straight up to the top of Potiphar's house, but that's not what happened. He was a slave. I'm talking, you know, the real deal in shekels, you know, getting whipped in a cage, you know, while he's on the journey to Egypt. And when he starts out in Potiphar's house, he doesn't get moved up immediately, we read, because I'm sure he doesn't go in there and they sit down for a job interview. You know, where do you see yourself in my house in 10 years? You know, how do you think that's going to work out? Do you think you're going to still be here? What kind of job do you want? A desk job? No, he's a slave, a legitimate slave, and we got to remember that he's done nothing wrong, but he's been wanted to be killed by his brothers, and now he's a slave in Potiphar's house. But it says in verse 2 of chapter 39 that the Lord is with him. It says the Lord is with Joseph, and he was a successful man. And he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight, and he served him. And he made him overseer over the entire house, and all that he had was put under his authority. So, he was a hard worker, and thus, because of his willingness to work hard and his willingness to stay faithful to God, he made everything that he did prosper, and he found favor in Potiphar's sight. That's what's going to happen if everything prospers in your life. You're going to find favor in someone's eye. So he was put in charge over the entire house. And it says so far as to say that Potiphar didn't worry about anything. He didn't even know what he had except for the bread that was on his plate when he was eating it, because Joseph was taking care of it. He didn't have to worry about anything else because Joseph was in charge. And when Joseph's in charge, you don't have to worry about anything. But it also says that he was in handsome in form and appearance, and because of that, he caught the eye of Potiphar's wife. Now, we all know Potiphar's wife in that story, how she was a bit of a floozy, if you will. But he was able to deny her advances time and time again. I want to read there in verses 8 and 9, or start in verse 7, excuse me. It says, and it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you're his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? So he's able to deny her advances for the right reason. First, I think it's admirable that he thinks of his master, of Potiphar. You know, he's done everything for me. Once I got here, he's put me up to this position of power. How do you expect me to do this to him? You know, the one thing that's kept from me is you. There's no way I'm going to betray that trust that he has for me. And also he talks about his admiration for God and God's will. And he says, how do you expect me to sin against God? God's been with me this whole time. You know, I was a slave, and I was brought into your house, and God saw to it that I was put in this position of power, and you want me to sin against him? You know, that's ridiculous. But he's able to deny her advances time and time again. But this last time he comes into the house, and you all know the story, she grabs him by the coat, and he flees. And she, like his brothers, uses his coat to form a false story about him. You know, she accuses him of attempted rape coming in to him to take him or to take her, and he flees and leaves his coat behind. So despite being good, this story was brought to Potiphar, and Potiphar, of course, was angered by the words that his wife had to say about Joseph, saying, you know, you brought this Hebrew in here, you brought him in here, and you've brought him here to mock us, and, you know, he's coming to me, and he ran when I screamed. So Potiphar's angered by this and throws him in jail. So again, despite being nothing but good, he was thrown in jail. He hasn't done anything wrong, and he actually did the right thing to do in this situation, but he was thrown in jail because of it. So again, we see him rise and fall. Now he's in prison, and again, I want to stress again here that he started out as a regular prisoner. It's very easy to read the story and go straight from him going into prison to him being head of the prison. But at first, he was a regular prisoner. He had a cell. He was, you know, in chains. It was the real deal. He was in prison. I'm sure he had to watch his back from the guys with shanks. He started out as a regular prisoner. But it says there in verse 21 that the Lord is with Joseph. And I want to read verse 21 through the end of the chapter there. It says, "Then the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did here, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper." So again, we see Joseph in a terrible situation. He's in jail for something he did not do, but the Lord is still with him. Now, he was raised to a position of power in prison because he worked hard again, and because when he worked hard, God saw that, and he made his work prosper. So again, he was raised to a position of power. He was in a situation where, again, the jailers did not have to worry about anything. Anything that the prisoners did was, you know, Joseph's responsibility. And they behaved when Joseph was around. And when everything was under Joseph's care, it was taken care of. Again, the jailer didn't have to worry about anything. Now, two more inmates in chapter 40 come into the dream. As you all know the story again, the baker and the cupbearer. And they are in prison for not making Pharaoh happy. So he throws them into jail. And at one night, they have a dream. Each one has a dream, and each one has its own interpretation. Now, these men are saddened in the morning because they don't exactly know what it means. Joseph comes to them, says, you know, why do you guys look so sad? What's the big deal? What's going on? And they tell him, you know, we've had these dreams, and we're not exactly sure what they mean. So they each tell the dream to Joseph, and he interprets it through God. And you all know the story. The baker has the dream of the vine growing up and him putting Pharaoh's cup back into his hand, and the baker has the dream of the baskets with the bread, and he's carrying them on his head, and the birds are picking it out, and he interprets the dreams to him. And he says, you know, in 3 days, the cupbearer, the butler, will be established to his position before. Well, the baker is going to be put to death. And all he asks of the cupbearer when he tells him the interpretation of the dream, in verse 14 of chapter 40, says, "But remember me when it is well with you, and please show kindness to me. Make mention of me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this house. For indeed, I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and also I have done nothing that they should put me into this dungeon." So they came true, and the cupbearer was restored to his position. And we kind of see, based on those two verses there, the displeasure Joseph had by being in prison. Because he says, get me out of this house. I was stolen away from my land, and I've done nothing to be in this position. I've done nothing deserving of to be in this dungeon. You know, just please remember me when you get out of here, and please tell Pharaoh about me, and so I can get out of here. I don't deserve to be here. So they came true, and the cupbearer was restored to his position. But of course, we don't see Joseph reap the rewards of being good again. So despite being good in everything, especially to the cupbearer in the situation, he was forgotten. I don't know exactly how that's possible. If you have a dream and someone tells you that you're going to live and another guy's going to die, how you forget that after 3 days. But it says there at the end of chapter 40 and verse 23, the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Now, it's important to remember that even though the sun didn't shine on Joseph again here and he was forgotten, that God, however, did not forget him. Now we come to the position where Pharaoh has a dream. Because it's 2 years later. Joseph has been in prison for 2 years. You know, this is, again, it's not club fed. He's in real prison for two more years, dealing with these prisoners and, you know, the scum of Egypt. So Pharaoh has a dream now, And we all know this dream. He has these two separate dreams, one with the seven fat cows and the seven ugly and gaunt cows, and the other one with the seven good heads of wheat and the seven bad heads of wheat. Now, he has this dream, and Pharaoh calls all the magicians, all the wise men, all the sorcerers of Egypt, you know, to come to him and interpret this dream for him. But nobody's able to do it. And it's at this time, 2 years later, that the cupbearer is like, now I remember. There was a Hebrew guy. He was in Egypt, and, you know, in the cell with me. Whenever you were mad at us and you put us in there, there was a Hebrew guy. We had dreams, and he was able to interpret them. Now, it's coming back to me now, 2 years later. So Pharaoh hears his words and, you know, has him brought to him. So they bring him out of jail, they clean him up, and they bring him before Pharaoh. And Joseph is able to interpret the dream that Pharaoh presented to him. Now, I think it's very important, again, that throughout this entire time where it seems it's very easy to believe that God has abandoned Joseph, that Joseph is still willing to give God the glory. In verse 16, after he's brought Joseph before him, Pharaoh says, I've had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it, but I've heard it said of you that you can understand a dream to interpret it. So Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. So despite, you know, this tough times that he's been through, he's still able to give God the glory when he's brought into the king of Egypt. So he tells Pharaoh the interpretation of the dreams, and again, you all know the story fairly well. He tells him, you know, the fat cows and the good heads of wheat, those are good years of plenty. You know, and then the seven bad years are going to be years of famine. And these years of famine are going to be so bad that people will forget the other years. That's what the dreams mean, what the seven thin cows devouring the seven fat cows. It says the famine's going to be so bad that nobody's even going to remember how good things were. So he gives Pharaoh this advice, you know, what you need to do, because this is going to come to pass soon. That's why God told it to you twice. He says what you need to do is, you know, save during these good years. Save one-fifth every year. And when times get rough, you know, go to these reserves that you have. You know, appoint to someone who's wise and who knows exactly how to handle this situation. So Pharaoh is pleased by the advice that Joseph gives and puts him into this position of power. And he says, you know, in all the matters of the throne, you're the guy. You're number one. I think that's kind of interesting, too. You know, he's going to let him do all the work and still get to sit on the big chair. But he gives Pharaoh the advice, and he's pleased with it, so he puts him into that position of power. Now, he leads the land of Egypt in wisdom, and again, I want to stress to you that he works hard. No, at no point in Joseph's life does it say that he slacked off or he didn't work as hard as he could. And I think that's pretty important because he worked hard, God helped him, everything in his hand to prosper. Now, you all know the rest of the story, how his brothers come and that whole situation. But this is as far as I wanted to take a review of his life. And the reason I wanted to stress that these key things is because to show how God works in mysterious ways. Now, let's go exactly a quick review of exactly what's happened to Joseph. Again, at the beginning of his life, he was hated by his brothers so much that they wanted him dead, so much that they wanted to kill him and even plotted to do so. They didn't kill him, but they sold him into slavery. Legitimate slavery. Slavery that's not fun. He wasn't in Potiphar's house, you know, at the top right away. He was a slave. And he was accused of rape by Potiphar's wife. And he was sent to prison because of it. Again, he didn't take part in any of that, but he was in prison because he did the right thing. I think Lawrence mentioned that in his prayer this morning, you know, that despite having everything to gain by being with Potiphar's wife, he passed it up. And again, you know, because of that, he was punished. He was put in jail, in real jail, where he suffered there for a time, but he was raised to a position of power. And then he was good to his fellow inmates. He was good to the cupbearer. He told him a story of where he would be raised to his position and work for the Pharaoh once again. But the cupbearer forgot him, so he suffered time and time again. But the point I want to make to you is that suffering never indicates that God doesn't care or that he's abandoned us. You know, in our life, we will all experience suffering. We will all experience pain. But never does it mean that God doesn't care or that he's left us. It says in chapter 39, verse 2, and in chapter 39, verse 21 that we've read earlier, that God was with Joseph. And he was always with Joseph. No matter how grim the situation, no matter how good things were at first, or no matter how things got bad after, God was always with Joseph. And he'll always be with us. Think of other examples in the Bible, Job, Jeremiah, and Jesus, and I'm sure there are plenty of other people that don't necessarily start with J, but Job, through his entire situation, God was always with him. Jeremiah and Christ alike, you know, God was always with these individuals, and he's always with us. Another point I want to make is that suffering is often a part of God's plan for our good. Suffering and pain, you know, as tough as they may be to deal with at times, they truly do help us grow in our spirituality. The terrible things that Joseph went through eventually led to him being the ruler of all Egypt. If you think about it, you know, he wouldn't have been able to save his family from the famine if he hadn't been sold into slavery by them. Now, I think that's kind of just an interesting thing to think about. He couldn't have saved the entire land of Egypt if Potiphar's wife hadn't made up a lie about him. But all these terrible things that he went through eventually led to him being ruler of all Egypt. Now, I'm not saying, obviously, that if we endure suffering and we stay steadfast to God's will, that we're going to be the vice president. That's not what I'm getting at. But suffering is often a plan for our good. No matter what we go through, you know, it's part of God's plan. He has a plan for us, and he'll see it through, no matter how bad or how good things are. Now, we will all experience pain on this earth, but ultimately, all of our tears will be wiped away. You know, not all of us are going to be rulers of Egypt, but if we endure, if we are able to know that God is with us throughout this suffering times, God will put us in a place where ultimately all of our tears will be wiped away and all of our pain will cease. Now, I think it's very interesting to note as well that nowhere in this book does God promise us we won't experience pain. He's never promised us that things are going to always be hunky-dory and everything is going to be fine. But he has promised us that he'll always be with us. I want to thank you so much for having me speak this evening. It's been a true blessing for me. I love this experience to do it. That's what I came to say tonight, and I want to thank you so much for paying such good attention. Tonight's lesson wasn't really about an invitation to the Lord, but if at this time you do feel that you've endured some things in this life that you can't handle on your own and you need someone to be with you, God is that person. God will always be with you. So if anything you need, please be subject to the invitation. Come now as we stand and sing.